Case 52 from the Shoyu Roku, Sozan's Dharmakaya, preface to the assembly. All knowledgeable persons are able to learn by parable and analogy, but when comparisons cannot be made, and when it's impossible to find something similar or identical, how can it be expressed? Main case. Attention. Sozan asked Toku Joza, Buddha's true Dharmakaya is like the vast sky. Its conforming to things and manifesting shapes is like the moon in the water. How can this principle of conforming be expressed? Toku said, it's like the donkey seeing the well. Sozan remarked, well said, but that's only 80% of it. Toku rejoined, how about you, Osho? Sozan replied, the well sees the donkey. Appreciatory verse. Donkey sees the well, well sees the donkey. Wisdom contains without exception. Purity permeates more than enough. Behind the elbow, who discerns the sign? Within the house, no books are kept. Loom threads don't hang, a matter of the shuttle. Patterns emerge every which way. The intent differentiates of itself. Today's the seventh day of our training period. The seventh day of our entering the Great Master's Forge. Entering the cauldron, I suppose you could say. And we all have been traversing the many realms in our practice. And we all have traversed the many realms with a single intention. A single intention. And that single intention has the capacity to take shape and take form and to differentiate itself into a myriad of occasions of practice, myriad contexts for our practice. The intention always remains the same, and the intention, because it is lively, and it, as we practice on a human level, on a personal level, on a very a modest level, include myself, this practice is a very, very humbling thing for all of us to do. It deconstructs us and humbles us and makes us poor and destitute, and that's a most wonderful thing, even though the last place in the world we would like to go. Nevertheless, when we, since we wouldn't go there unless circumstances demanded it of us, of course life demands it of us, we all will accomplish our death. But in the sesshin, because we sit upright in this container, then we taste a life in a very immediate way, and we have an intention. And the intention, there is nothing but this intention, and the teaching of Zen is there's nothing but this great intention, or nothing but this great Dharmakaya body. And the Dharmakaya bodies will this is now, these are core teachings in the Zen Buddhist tradition, so not my opinion or something I cooked up on summer vacation or some New Age teaching, but these are the root teachings of our lineage that I'm trying to share. So perk up your ears and give a listen. So this intention, or this Dharmakaya body, as it says in the koan, permeates all of our experience. That means all of our experience. So, and it has the capacity, it is nothing but the capacity to morph or shapeshift or manifest as, due to causes and conditions. The mirror doesn't care what comes in front of it, and that not caring is not the disguised not caring that we so often manifest, which is a kind of cynical indifference, but it's a great willlessness and willingness that it enters fully into. That's the teaching, that the aliveness of the moment is the manifestation of the Dharmakaya body of God. or of Dharma or of Buddha, if you don't like those words, or the unspeakable, or just whatever you're comfortable with or uncomfortable with, or anyway, the intent clearly differentiates of itself, and so our intention is to pay attention, and that's not an easy thing, is it, to sustain attention, to pay attention, to show up in the game, to come out of the bleachers and show up in the game, and to really pay attention, and actually more than pay attention, initially in practice. And when I talk about initially, or I talk about stages of practice or levels of practice, I don't mean them in any way as a judgment or as a hierarchy, more as different ways of appreciating this one thing, which is our life. Certainly to be able to cultivate mindfulness is a necessary practice in the Buddhist tradition. To cultivate, we say, shamatha, calm abiding, and openness of heart. To cultivate the seven factors of enlightenment, which are the grounded factors of equanimity and serenity and absorption. Jhana, and also the aroused qualities of mind, which are the qualities of curiosity and investigation, aliveness, joy, enthusiasm, joy for your practice, your life, and energy, expansive qualities. And those are traditionally spoken of as from three perspectives. Of course, these are just devices that we use to talk about life. Mnemonic devices are ways of ordering our experience, but it's really helpful to have some of these in mind. Not that they're a truth in themselves, just fingers pointing to something that is alive, a living fabric, a living tissue, but ways to begin to enter in, enter into the moment, rather than sleep or think, which we spend most of our time doing, if we're honest. We just are tripping or sleeping or over-aroused and thinking about the meaning of the Dharma, or sleeping and not really entering in. So these, what the Buddha called, in terms of these foundation teachings, early teachings, and when I say earlier foundational, in no way to make them less than. Each one of them is koan, and the seven together, if we think of a balance beam or the center being the mindfulness or awareness, and the three factors on the grounded side being fudomyo, the one who shows up, who's immovable in the midst of it all, is concentrated, who's, we say, vitaka vakara, you place the mind on something and it stays there. And actually we can, with practice, you can practice and the mind can be tamed and the mind can be trained. Now the purpose of Zen is not to tame or train the mind per se, but in order to enter into what it is that we're investigating, we need training, like an artist who would paint. It's helpful for an artist to have some foundation practices of figure drawing or whatever. I'm not an artist, but to be able to do that. So we cultivate these practices, which are art forms and practices of both calm abiding and openness of heart, and as a balance on the fulcrum of mindfulness, a fulcrum of attention and open-heartedness. And as David reminded us in the Buddhist tradition, mind means heart. Heart-mind includes the heart and the mind, actually includes the whole body, but we say heart or kokoro is the word in Shin Kokoro is the word in Japanese, which is heart, and it includes, well, it's quite a rich word. It means wholehearted practice, full engagement in the practice. But anyway, these two qualities of openness of heart and concentration and presence and poise, a certain pliancy, openness, and balanced in the place of a heart, or the soft spot of the heart, or tenderness of the heart. That's the and so we are cultivating those qualities continually in order that we might enter into Dharma gates are countless. I vow to master them. I vow to enter into them. I vow to explore them. I vow to be intimate with them. I vow to inhabit them. I vow to participate in them, you see. But you can't participate if you're not there. And you can't be there by thinking about it. So it's very, very important that we practice. If you you may not want to be a yogi, and that's fine, in the sense of really delving. We're in it whether we like it or not, and life does it to us whether we like it or not, and there's nothing but this one life, and there's nothing but the activity of it arising and passing, and whether we like it or not, it is doing us and will do us, and we're nothing but it. But, and this is a very big but, in order to realize it and in order to appreciate it in this life, before we get so old that we just can't practice at all, rapidly happening anyway, but we're not. We're all vital and alive and full of beings, each one of us, and we have hopefully many decades in front of us. Maybe we'll get run over by a truck tomorrow or be eaten by an alligator on our Armada cruise, but the chances are, we won't. Excuse me, I'm differentiating now. A friend of mine said, now remember, when you go kayaking, don't put your hand in the water. He said, and remember, don't stand up in the kayak and try to pee over the edge like you did last time. Actually, I think it was the time before last I had a sudden awakening. A great Kensho. I thought, I'll just stand up and I couldn't, it was in that tangled part in one of those little places I couldn't get to shore. I often have trouble getting to shore and end up having to pee in unusual places. So I thought it was a commendable idea to stand up in the canoe and drop my trousers and I'll just pee over the edge. But those little kayaks are quite tippy matters, aren't they? And anyway, I went to, I had a sudden awakening. Anyway, back to the koan. So we want to be to, so to speak, enter into the river more, hopefully. Anyway, so we cultivate these qualities of steadiness and openness, and not as calisthenics or to protect us from the aliveness of the moment, but so that we can enter, we can accomplish our bodhisattva way and participate in it more deeply. And this is a fearsome task. When I started my practice in the 60s and met Sansanin in 1972 and this has been my great single-minded passion since, both wonderful and a great challenge. But I remember this teaching phrase. Sansanin was the master of teaching phrases. I met him early, probably why I moved in with him. I thought I'd get him before anyone else could get him, and then you'd get enlightened fast that way. He said, you have to remember that if you don't make anything, you will get everything. That was one of his teaching phrases. And we all think, oh, that's great. I will get what I want, basically. That we all translate it into, the Dharma is this. So I will dwell, or I will get whatever I want. And our idea of practice is the projection of our own ideal. Trungpa,
in the early days, I had the wonderful opportunity to hang out with him and sit with him up at Tail of the Tiger in the 70s when he was in his stride, when he was in his power, you know. He died a very young man of, well, he smoked and drank himself to death, basically. But he was a brilliant, great bodhisattva and very a challenging man, an incredible teacher, incredible, idiosyncratic, wonderful, wonderful teacher. And if you have not read, as practitioners, yogis, his book, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, I think it's one of the probably the great classic of American Dharma practice. But anyway, he had this term that he used called spiritual materialism, but basically we all have an ideal of what practice will bring us or what it means to be enlightened. And we cling to it with ferocious tenacity, like my bulldog used to cling to the tire of the UPS truck. We'd throw her around in circles, hammer her, break her, smash her. You know, but she, this was her idea of enlightenment. So she would, as you know, right, she was such a great teacher for me. Still, I grasp all kinds of tires myself. And, don't let go, but she would race to the and grasp the tire, and it would throw her into the wheel, would revolve her into the wheel well around the 12 links of dependent origination very quickly. A basic ignorance to life, old age, sickness, and death, and back where she started from. And I would take her to the vet, and the vet would shoot her full of morphine. It would cost her thousands of dollars. That I, in my monk's life, I. That's a year's salary, literally. And then we'd piece her back together, and she'd wait on the porch for the next, and as soon as she could walk, she'd get it. Live by the sword, die by the sword, into the fray. And she would run. And break, next time, lost her eyeball. She came back with her eye hanging, and I packed it in ice, and we went to the vet with her holding this little being that I loved as much as my own life. We love our animals that way. And again, you know, she was unfazed. Then, so she broke her, next time she broke her, she smashed her eye and had to be taken out. Then she had one eye, only one. No problem. It's a little problematic with depth perception, but it didn't phase her. Off she'd go, and then she attacked the meter reader with the great bulldog, you know, Sancho Panza. Off she went and broke her jaw, and then she broke her shoulder, and then anyway, went on until she had trouble getting around. And then when she couldn't get around, she took up a new hobby because she couldn't run any longer. She was so beaten and shattered from, you know, being beaten helpless by the waves of samsara, but by her ideal, a certain beauty to it. She took up baiting rattlesnakes and copperheads. Really. Copperheads were her favorite, actually. And she would, we have a lot of copperheads on the mountain because it's a very rural place and we don't kill them. So, and they, we see them in the temple sometimes, and they'll bask on the wall behind the temple. They'll come out of the, and we don't bother them. We don't. So we welcome. We try to really practice that all life has its own beauty and is of great value, and all of life wants to live as much as we do. It's not there for us to, you know, cut its head off and eat it, but it's there to. So anyway, she would find them and then bark at them, you know, and get up real close at her bull, with her one eye. And bark at her. And then she'd get them to strike at her, you know. She thought that was great fun. And she would try and, just as they strike, this was Shikantaza practice, you know, just except she was avoiding the ta just enough to, but to get really aroused, you know. So she, you know, we love to flirt, and then we say, oh, just kidding. I didn't mean, you know, or just make sure that, you know, someone's interested, and then say, oh, just kidding. And she would jump back, and the snake would lunge at her, right? And then she, and then the snake would go back, sort of the, you know, distance or pursuer old trick that we human beings like to play. You know, we go back and forth being the distance or the pursuer, And so she would play this game back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, always trying to maintain a certain safe distance from a certain aliveness, which I suppose there was a certain intelligence. But the snakes are they are quite good at being snakes. And a little better than a bulldog is being a bulldog if the bulldog has only one eye, because the bulldog has no depth perception with only one eye. So the snake would get her right in the face, right, and then we would go off to the vet again, to the emergency room with blood transfusions. And that was another year's salary. And then she got bitten one other time. I was doing zazen, and she came into the temple. She would hang out at the temple when we would practice, and she came in and lay down very quietly in a cool spot, and I thought, oh, how touching. She'd been bitten again, anyway. But Trungpa said, spiritual idealism is we have an ideal of practice, and we project it onto the universe and imagine that's what practice is about. And then we pursue it. Right. And we get mad at anything that's not what we think it should be, and we pursue it with great vigorousness, and we think that the universe is that there is some spiritual ideal out there, outside of life, right, that we can model our life after in order to attain enlightenment. That's a human predicament. And the thing that makes it even more complex is that since we have no proprioception or very little proprioception of thought and image, we don't know when we're thinking. You know when you're eating dinner, hopefully. And you know, that's why the first foundation of mindfulness in the Buddhist tradition is mindfulness of sensation, but we can't tell the difference between concept and reality. And we will die for our concepts. And we will think when our concepts are taken away from us that we're being murdered. And we will shout and fight, and the imperative, the thought of necessity will emerge, and the impulse of necessity, and then we go to war. And that's human life. But we do clearly project this image, and then try to model ourselves at it, and imagine that the universe is treating us like our image is treating us inside of us. And it takes a great deal of practice and presence to begin to let go of this, because it's scary as hell. To let go. It's very, very scary to be groundless and have your opinions stripped away from you. And most especially scary to have your opinions stripped away from you since it's all the aliveness, when you're in an aliveness that you don't want to be in, and that you are convinced is an aliveness that is not enlightenment. And then if you have that idea taken away from you, which you will by the activity of Dharma, there is an enormous opportunity to inhabit something that's very vivid and very bright, right? You all want a big experience. Mm. Well, it's being served up moment by moment. But anyway, you inhabit that without, and you dare to begin to melt the opinion in the safety of practice, and that which was an aliveness which you thought was what makes yourself wrong and everybody else wrong when you get there, is a brightness and intensity, and we begin to start to inhabit these different places. But the challenge of this, and now I'm starting to talk about a deep practice, a very deep practice on the cushion. And in order to enter into the stream, a certain stability and presence is required because of the torrent of thinking. But as you get up into the practice more and more deeply, if you choose, and you don't have to do this, I'm really into it, as you know. So, hello. So I've explored this landscape a lot. I consider myself quite young, but relatively speaking to most people I meet, I'm very experienced. Anyway. As the thinking, as you don't pursue the thinking and don't identify with thoughts and feelings as they come up, they're the first skirmish line, you know, like just a skirmish line of this encounter. So as they fall away, or as you're on the highway, as you're traversing this way of practice, or this way of kinhin, which is the great way, the great walk in the garden, Kinhin meaning literally, the word literally means the touching of horizontal and vertical, the touching of it, of stability and a pure and total presence with the activity of the moment on the way. That is, in the Buddhist tradition, considered to be Kinhin, the walk, or the walking along the Tao, or the great way of life. Sorry. As we walk in that way, along the highway, we get into the countryside, into the garden. And when you get into the garden, the billboards, the spaces between the billboards that dot the highway and the city, in the congested city that is just running full tilt someplace. The spaces between the billboards are wider, and then you're out into the, you're into the country. Now, when you step into the country, you step into a wild place, a natural place, and also a wild place. And the energies that you encounter are both wondrous and beautiful, in the sense we all have those experiences of the freshness and the aliveness of stepping into the garden without defense. We close the gap. And how do you manifest true love in the garden? Is we have moments of self-realization where we see, wow, this is not make-believe. These are not poems. These aren't like nice metaphors that old people created when they didn't have something to do. This is really about something incredibly profound and beautiful. So anyway, the billboards open up, and then you're in the garden. Now, when you're in the garden, you get the whole garden. As San Sanin said, if you don't make anything, you'll get everything. And he really meant it, really meant everything. You know, we all want to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. I mean, so then you're out there, and then you start to you get down into the raw aliveness of the moment, the flashes and the movements of life force. And you get into the G of the fabric. This we talk about the loom and the fabric of life, not as a nice thing that's an objectified reality, but something that you move into, which is a three-dimensional world that you enter into. And when you enter into this is called tantra. The word for tantra means entering the weave of it. And tantra is a naked encounter with life. It's very exhilarating. It's absolutely terrifying at times, and sometimes completely peaceful. But the point being that when you get down into this other world, it doesn't play by the rules of conventional reality. It doesn't play by nicety. It's not what you think. It doesn't play by those rules. It's just immediacy itself. And then to practice in that way, and not as an ideal, I think for us as practitioners, it's important that we take this as the tiniest little piece that we could possibly imagine. Not a big piece, a little piece, tiny little crumb. Put a little crumb on the plate. Would I put a little crumb in a little mouth and get one little true taste. Oh, thank you so much. Just a little taste might have more impact, and you know. Anyway, we move down in, and then we start to encounter it naked, you know, no clothes on, you know. It's this is called tantra. This is called the bodhisattva way, and now in those energies, since you are innocent and you have no protection, that's why practice is really important and exciting and creative and the most interesting, challenging thing you can do as a human being. Well, some people. We're lay people, so most lay people are trying to chisel their way into the heartland, or have a little. And there are yogis who are, some of us are more introverted. I put myself in this category, trying to chisel our way out. You know, but either way, but anyway, the point being, you meet, you're down, and then you're meeting a raw, and it doesn't, your idea, the ideas don't help, and it's a challenge, because, and also enormously rewarding, wonderfully rewarding and alive. And so, but I think for our purposes, what's really necessary and important is to really get the principle clearly of this self-fulfilling samadhi and begin to play with it, in each one of us in our own way, in very small and modest ways, not with an idealistic, well, I'm going to go on a diet now, I'll never touch butter again, you know, and then you know, walk by the refrigerator and your hands in there and you've got the butter on but you might say, well, maybe I'll have one muffin instead of three, or, you know, there's a lot, I think there's more leverage that way, but if the principle, hopefully you, I know we have all tasted the principle, but the mind is so busy that it just gets, you know, wished and washed away so fast. But to taste this principle that we're working with, that's being taught here, and the principle is the self-fulfilling samadhi shikantaza, koan, it's the same. And in other words, we establish, and this is a training, a calm abiding and openness of heart with this practice of mindfulness. And then we begin experimenting when we have some poise and pliancy and safety. And of course, here in the retreat, we test edges where we're really out there and, you know, we don't know what's up. And we clarify the principle. So if you clarify the principle for yourself and you see that it's really true and workable, then you can start to go to work if you choose, if you want to really be, you know. Anyway, koan study is the great offering in this spiritual stream, the koan shikantaza. Shikantaza is a koan. Shikan means to slow down. Kan means to perceive, open the hand of thought, show up, open your heart, mind, be present. But slow down enough so that you're present without discrimination, without opinion, without condition. Now, in some tiny way, little way. And ta means to ta. So shikan is the koan of koan. Shikan, koan literally means a legal a document. It was actually in medieval China, it was a koan, initially was the document that the emperor, when he wanted to put out a law to the realm that would make equal all of the differences of society, he would make it a proclamation or a koan, and would send it out and have it, you know, like in those old Robin Hood movies and stuff like that. But anyway, yeah, but the koan, and then he had the original with the seal, so that it was, there was the original, and the document was law. And the intention, the ko of koan, what the intention of this public document, of course now we're talking about this life, was to make unfairness fair. That was the understanding of the law. In other words, to make koan was to make fair all of the particularnesses and differences of life, to make them become even or fair, to make unevenness even, to make unfairness fair, right? So the koan originally was the document, and the document also had the implication in the Chinese character of not only was it absolute truth, and again, when we say absolute, we don't mean fixed, but we mean that there is a reality, and that's what's going on, right? So the koan meant absolute, the reality of it, the factness of it, and it also had, within the character, was curiosity. Interesting that something could have this, anyway. And the koan, or shikantaza, shikan is koan, is the koan. How do you slow down? And show up and perceive, and you have to embody it to do it, right? So that's the general koan, That's what will make unfairness, your miserable karma, fair. So the ko of the koan means the shikan or shikantaza means to slow down and show up. Then the case of the koan, the donkey, or the particularness, or the, all of these cases of our life, alivenesses of our life, is the ta. So the ta is the case in the book of life. All right. So then the ta is where you touch this crossover place of presence, and on the way, where you touch or you encounter this living thing. Okay. So shikan ta. Shikan means is the ko, and ta is the case, and za is the posture of being upright and elegant and pliable, and having your sit bones line with the little bones inside your pelvis, and the bones inside your pelvis align with this winding road of the spine that actually has an axis, and the axis of your spine lining up with the shoulder joint, and the shoulder joint lining up with the ear joint, and the upright upright in the very, very center of the aliveness of the moment, shikantaza or koan, to encounter a koan, a fundamental common ground or sameness. On meaning keeping your own space, your own place, your own particularity. So that's we say, or we say, if we go back to original teachings, we say praticca samuppada, dependent origination, dependent, the wrist bone connected to the bone. The flower bone connected to the lizard bone connected to the sun bone connected to the flower bone connected to the... See what I mean? Yeah, we get into it. And that's the dependent origination for teacher. And what does samuppada mean? Samuppada means is the on of the koan. It means up close and personal.